It's a great schluss to welcome Rabbi Shmuel Maybach from Yeshiva University. As the program for the YUCBY based Medrash, I just want to remind everybody that Monday to Thursday evening we have a kollel led by Rabbi Wiederblank with 10 kollel people available to learn between the slots 8 and 10. There are quite a few slots still available. If you can give an hour a week, an hour every 2 weeks, even an hour a month, you can learn whatever you'd like. You can discuss what you don't want to learn, but it would be a beautiful opportunity to spend an hour in the Beis Medrash with a kollel person, really having an opportunity of Talmud Torah and improving the learning in our Beis Medrash. It's a tremendous chus this morning to welcome Rabbi Maybach. And Rabbi Maybach serves as the BMP Maggid Shir and has been a Sgan Mashiach at Reach for the past 4 years. And although I personally haven't heard him, I've heard many unbelievable things from my children and from their friends. And it's chus gadol. It's a tremendous chus to welcome Rabbi Maybach to Bnei Shurim.
Truthfully, the Zuchus is mine. I've heard so much about the Virgin County Beis Medrash, both through word of mouth and through the CDs that they often spread, helping me hear during my commute sometimes beautiful words of Zohar. And it's a special Zuchus, especially on January 1st, the day that when I drove today from Passaic, I noticed that 98% of our population is definitely fast asleep. How we're up, daven, and sharing Torah together. It's such a blessing to be here. Please make sure to avail yourselves of the Maror Mekomos, the source sheets. They're not necessary for this year, but they'll enhance your appreciation of the Torah we're going to study together. Smoking, skiing, and cell phones. Risk adversity in the eyes of halacha. Begins with a story. The Gemara tells us in the first source in front of you, Brachos, Lefamid Beis, Lefamid Beis, Tana Rabbanan. There's a story. Maisa b'chosir echad, there was once a great tzaddik, Shaya mistala baderech, that was davening on the way. Apparently he didn't use the old-fashioned telephone booth trick where you don't do a telephone booth and pretend you're davening mincha, pretend you're on the phone and really davening mincha. He was there, in the middle of the road, davening. Bahed mon echad. A Roman officer came, the Nasma Shalom, and said, Shalom Aleichem, good afternoon. As most religious Jews would. He didn't respond. The Roman waited patiently until he finished his davening. Once davening concluded, Amalei said to him, Reka! Idiot! Empty person! Doesn't it say in your very sacred text, Rak, Hishamer Lecha, Ushmar Nafshecha, only watch yourself and watch your life. Uksevit says furthermore, V'nishmartem ma'od v'nafshecheichem. Watch your lives very carefully. And by you being reticent, by not responding, you naked your life in the non-bold text. When I gave you salutation, why didn't you respond? Says the Gemara, the Roman said, had I decided to decapitate you on the spot, no one would have been the wiser. I could have severed your head from your body, left you for dead. No one could have protested. You endangered your very life. You violated two precepts in the Torah. And the story continues, might be familiar with the end. The person said, hold on a second. Let me answer. What if you were talking to the emperor and your friend said hello? Would you answer? Of course not. I was talking to the emperor of emperors, the king of all kings, God, and that's why I didn't answer. But this Roman, this brutal Roman officer, who scared the chassid, the tzaddik, quoted two psukim. The psukim in the second source in front of you, Dvarim Perek Daled, the first pasuk in this chapter, pasuk tes, in this part, and the last pasuk in this paragraph, pasuk tesvav. The first underline, rak, ki shemer v'cha, u'shmer nafshecha ma'od. Only watch yourself and watch your life ma'od. Very much. Again, at the end, v'nishmartem ma'od, v'nafshecheichem. Watch your lives very carefully. From this, it seems, we have a precept in the Torah, two precepts, to protect oneself. Not to endanger one's life. This is part of the halacha, both in the Rambam and the bottom of page one. Rambam says that a person has to protect himself, as we'll see on the second page, Shulchan Aruch as well. This Rambam is in a very fascinating place. It's in Hilchos Rotzeach. Hilchos Rotzeach literally deals with people that are murderers, that have no regard for human life. Yet, in the middle of Hilchos Rotzeach, there's also a concept called Shmiras HaNefesh, protecting oneself. How does that come up? Because halacha is, if you have a house that has a roof, and the roof is accessible to people, not like most roofs that are slanted, but if it's a roof which people can go on, there's a chiyuv in atara to make a ma'afa, a gate, because a person might endanger himself or herself by ascending to the roof and unfortunately falling off. That's halacha, min atara. And the halacha is not only a ma'afa on a roof, but any situation, perhaps a swimming pool, anything which is dangerous, there's a chiyuv in atara to protect ourselves and others against. Within those halachas of ma'afa, says the Rambam in the bold, the chayin kol nichshol. Likewise, any stumbling block, sheyesh bo sachanas nefashos, that has danger to one's life, mitzvahs asei lahasiru. It's a requirement min haTorah to remove it. U'lishamer mimenu, and to be careful to watch oneself from it. U'lizar b'davar, be careful in the matter. Yafe yafe. Very, very well. You'd have to see what's the Rambam echoing? The idea of yafe yafe, double and language of being very, very careful. Perhaps the language in the Torah, it says ma'od both times. Nishmarta ma'od, and yishama welcha nafshecha ma'od. Very much. So the Rambam, how do I know you have to protect yourself? Because it says, yishama welcha u'shmar nafshecha. Watch yourself, and watch your life. So the Rambam further in the next halacha, hi beizvarim. Many things asur chachamim, chazal prohibited, b'tnei sheyesh b'hem sakanas nefashos. Because they endanger one's life. So Rambam clarifies halacha l'maisa, we have a requirement to protect ourselves. After the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch says the same thing. It comes to the top of page 2. These are the last two halachos in all of Shulchan Aruch Chosh Mishpat. Most of Chosh Mishpat deals with monetary law, but the halachos of Ma'afa are there as well. It says to Shulchan Aruch, the very end, the last volume, last sif in Chosh Mishpat, the chayin kol michshol, sheyesh bo sachanas nefashos, any stumbling block that can cause a person to endanger one's life, mitzvahs asei lahasiro, you're required to remove it, u'lishamer mimenu, to watch yourself from it, very careful. Shemar, how do I know? Hishemar l'cha u'shmar nafshecha. Watch yourself and watch your life. And then the Shulchan Aruch continues the next sif. Habizar, many matters are prohibited because of endangering one's life. Those that are familiar with Microsoft Word might recognize this Shulchan Aruch as Control V. Cut and paste. Cut and paste it straight from the Rambam into the Shulchan Aruch. If you use the mouse, you'll notice with the click. Cut, paste, Rambam, Shulchan Aruch. Halacha Maisa, we must watch ourselves. It's funny, if you look carefully, what's the only pasuk that the Rambam in the Shulchan Aruch quote? Yishama lecho yishmar nafshecha, watch yourself. The first pasuk in the parsha. Although if you ask the average person, if you're familiar with the concept of danger in halacha, if you ask the person, ostensibly, take a survey. Is there a precept against endangering yourself in halacha. Most people, if they're familiar with this topic in general, will quote the pasuk of v'nishmartem ma'od v'nafshoseichem. Where is that quote in Shulchan Aruch? Nowhere. Not here? Not anywhere else. Where's the quote in the Rambam? Nowhere as well. Very curious. The pasuk is very similar in the same parsha, and it's codified by halacha, but nowhere does it say v'nishmartem ma'od v'nafshoseichem. Uncle Maishi, which volume? It's a video. The video or the video? Okay. So let's bring it right to Uncle Maishi. Oh. So, we're in a shiur talking about the Bergen County Beis Medrash, and by definition, a Beis Medrash has two, there are two different ways of reading a Beis Medrash. Beis Medrash often means a place where people study Torah seriously, a litvashur Beis Medrash. Also, most Chasidus Shtiblach are called Bati Medrash. Often a term used for a Chassidish Yeshiva. And you can be a Litvish in a Beis Medrash or a Chassidish. In my family, my grandfather, Mr. David Maybrook, who lived for most of his life in Tarakale, originally comes from Nowy Sącz in Poland. He was not particularly a Chassid. We have mostly Litvishim and Hagim. But he had an affinity, a connection, whenever he heard about the Sanzer Rebbe, the Sanzer Rav, even though he was not a Chassid. There's a story which I can't explain. I have more Litvish and Etios in learning, and this is the Rebbe Shemaisa story with the Rebbe, and I can't explain it. There are questions you can ask, but it shows how powerful the pasuk of the Nishmartim Ma'od V'Nafshoseichem really is. In the next source, Shuvas Yad Ephraim by Rav in the 60s in Tel Aviv quotes, Tevet Shuvas Hoa Moshe, maybe, Shemaron Hagon HaKadosh Mitzanz, Baal Divrei Chaim, the great Gon inside of the Sanz Rebbe, the Divrei Chaim. Unfortunately, towards his more senior years, Leizek Nuso, Hayachola, he was unwell. Ulfi Pekudas HaRofim, based upon the instruction of the doctors, Oster Hayo Alecho HaKazayis Mara B'Lel HaSeda. He couldn't eat Mara. So imagine, you had the Sanz Rebbe's Tish, who can even think of the grandeur, both physically and spiritually, they had there at the Sanz Rebbe's Seder. The Sanz Rebbe washed in Tefillas Tadayim, Rukta, Motzi, Matzah with zest, and then comes time for Mara. Lecha HaTzadik, in the bold, the great Tzadik took Pizayis Mara Liado, took up the maror in his hand. Ubarech, he made a bracha. B'shem u'malchus, Baruch Ata Hashem. Elokeinu, Melech Olam, follow in the text. Asher tedeshanu, the mitzvosav, the tzivanu, the nishmartem, ma'od, v'nafshoseichem. And with that, he put down the maror back on the Seder plate. That's how seriously the Sanz Rebbe took the concept of a Nishmartem Ma'od V'Nafshoseichem. Made his own bracha. When I asked, we can't make a bracha up. It's not codified by Chazal. We can't just make up a bracha. It's a lot of say questions you might ask. But the concept, the fact that the halacha is V'Nishmartem Ma'od V'Nafshoseichem, that's what prohibited him from eating the maror. Perhaps even greater, the mitzvah of maror is not as drabanon. The Nishmartim is Minat Torah, because the Sanz Rebbe to actually make a bracha, B'Shem HaMalchus. The Nishmartim Ma'od V'Nafshoseichem. Yet, if you look back in the sources, back on page 1, take the Pesukim in context. We discussed quite conclusively. The Torah says not once but twice we have a requirement to protect ourselves. It's codified by the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch. Yet look at the pasuk. Finish the pasuk. Rak hishamar lechol shmar nafshecha ma'od. Protect yourself from what? Pen tishach, because you might forget. Es advarim asheru einecha. What your eyes saw, you might forget. The Sinaitic experience. Ma'avad Har Sinai. The pasuk will continue. The end of the parsha, the Nishmartem Ma'od V'Nafshoseichem, Kilo Isim Kol Tmuna, because you never saw any image. It's an exhortation not to become idolatrous. Specifically, the Torah is telling us two mandates. Number one, remember Mount Sinai. And number two, don't worship Avodah Zarah. The Torah is not telling us to see your doctor regularly. Don't do things that are dangerous like bungee jumping. So, says the Milchas Chinuch, how does the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch tell us, in this pasuk, which is totally out of context, we have a requirement to protect ourselves and protect our lives. The pasukim are very limited. They only mean one specific idea. Remember Har Sinai, and don't violate Avodah Zarah. In fact, you might say, well, it's not the Rambam's fault, it's not the Shulchan Aruch's fault, they got it from the Gemara. The very first source we saw together says that the Gemara quotes both Pesukim, Yishom Elecha and Menishmartim. You think back. Who is the Man D'Amar? Who is the opinion of the Gemara that said that you have to protect yourself because it says Menishmartim and Yishomer? Who is speaking in that Gemara? Which Heilige Amora? The Hegmon. No Amora. It was the rotten Roman that scared the Chassid. Says Menachem Chassinuch, that's your source of all Pesukim. It's out of context. Of all people, it's a terrible person who you're quoting. That's how we know we protect our lives. Back to the second page. It says the Menachem Chassinuch in the middle of the second page. In the bold. The Ein Even. Frankly, I don't understand. The Rashi Shomer Ksiv Kilo Isim Kol Tmuna. It says you haven't seen any graven image. That's what it means. Avos Shmiras Haguf. To possess one corporal, Yilo Shemarnu. We never heard that. Don't tell me it was from the Gemara. Vihine al Hegmon Lakasha. Don't tell me it's a proof from the Hegmon, from this Roman officer. He ain't meanin. They're happy person. What they do, the Romans distorted everything. They distorted all the words of Hashem. It's from his decrepit interpretation of our Holy Torah. Umiyadeya, who knows? Is it Pirish Shapir Shah Russia because of that? Who knows what silly chat this Russia had in the Sukkim? So the Daito, in his misunderstanding, Kai Al Shmir Sagruf. Then it means one has to accept one's life. Akhtivir Rabbinah Rambam, Srikim Il. But the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, I don't understand. How do they quote this? Lahalach. Very powerful questions. What's the source? What do you think? Is there a way to resolve the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch quoting this Gemara from the Hegmon, from this Roman officer? How do we resolve this? It would seem it's an issue of methodology. Just imagine for a second. If the Roman officer said Pesukim, but the Gemara thought were incorrect, would the Gemara actually quote both Pesukim? Hard to say. But one might argue, against the Mechlechinov, that if the Gemara marshals these two Pesukim, it's not because the Hegemon said it, it's because the Gemara wasted precious ink to quote these two Pesukim. The Gemara is ratifying what the Hegemon said. So in reality, it's not from the Hegemon, from this Roman officer that we have it. What's our source? From the Gemara. The Gemara deemed the words of the Hegemon worthy enough to quote, because indeed what he's saying is correct. So it seems the source really is not the Hegemon. The source is that the Gemara quotes the story and quotes it from beginning to end with the Pesukim. The Gemara is indeed enforcing what the Hegemon says. What about the fact that it's out of context? So that we are already aware of the fact that many drashos, often there's a simple pshat, and there's a drash. So the drasha is what the Hegemon said. But the Rambam and Shulchan Aruch quoted it because indeed the Gemara is ratifying the words of this Roman officer. So we've seen so far that a person has a requirement to protect himself or herself from danger. To what extent? You might argue, we really shouldn't get out of bed in the morning because who knows what lurks outside. Especially the past few days, ice, snow, driving. Even on January 1st. Might be dangerous, maybe more dangerous. Walking. Certainly going to work, walking in Midtown, dangerous, many people. Although you can look at me and say that's strange. But why? Where does the requirement to protect oneself from danger start? And where does it stop? Is there some percentage, some ratio, some way of knowing this danger is okay, that danger isn't? And between you and me, what if you stay home? So being sedentary in bed is also rachman ultan dangerous. There's no way out. What danger is okay according to the Torah? Which danger isn't? In general, in halakha, we have a concept of rov. Rov helps in certain situations. Let's say you drop a little bit of milk by mistake into your cholent. That's called bittul berov. And also in percentages in the world. Ruba de kaman. We make presumptions in life. What often psychology calls heuristics. We presume that if things aren't so frequent, the mind works presuming it's not going to happen. So we presume in life, you walk outside, you're probably not going to get hit by a car, chas v'shalom, even though, according to statistics, once in a while people do, rachman ultan, get hit by cars. We presume you don't. And that's ratified by halacha based on rov. We presume most situations in life are not dangerous. Let's fine tune that a little bit. Years ago, there's a major controversy as far as tuna fish. Which tuna fish is okay according to halacha? Tuna fish, of course, is packaged in the Far East. There are very few Jews that are there. And there are two concerns that might exist with tuna fish. Number one, it's usually cooked without a Jew present, what we might call bishulakum. And number two, it's also packaged without a Jew present. And although companies make us sure that it's dolphin safe, more of a real concern is that there might be other fish that are smaller than dolphins, which might get packaged in our tuna. In fact, the Star K has on their boxes of their cans of tuna, on the two legs, the two arms of the star for the Star K, usually it says BY, Bishul Yisrael, and MT, Mashgiach Tamidi. They send Mashgiachim to make sure that they are there in the retorts, to turn on the retorts, or to make sure it's not Bishul Akum, as well as to supervise the packaging to make sure there's nothing which is not kosher. Yet, most commercially sold tuna fish that you and I buy is not supervised by a Jew. Who does the Ashkacha? OU. Almost all commercially sold tuna fish, the common brands, are OU. And OU is not concerned with Bishul Akum or with the idea of Mashgiach Tamidi. Why? From the Sefer Maris Salvechik that the OU had for many, many years ago for canned foods in general, and one of the most famous articles written by it about it was by Rav Herschel Schechter in the very first journal called Mesora. Mesora is the OU's halacha and kashrus journal, a Torah journal. The very first one, Rav Schechter wrote an important article in Kashrus Dav Hatuna B'Kufsaot, the Hashracha, the kashrus of tuna fish in cans. And based upon that, as well as Reginak and others, the mainstream approach in most of our circles in general is to rely on tuna fish being kosher. One of the reasons is, as Rav Schechter outlines in the article, Chamesh Chamisha Sudei Rov. There's five types of rov. Sometimes a rov means there's a pretty good chance that I'm okay. In some areas of halacha, that's fine. But in some areas of halacha, we need even more. Yet tuna fish is such a small concern that there's a non-kosher food. We said there's such a strong rov, we don't even need a mashgiach there altogether. But Rav Schechter outlines five different levels of rov. For example, there's a rov majority of 51%. The majority, slightly, in some elections, that's enough you need to win back the White House. But in halakha, that's usually not considered a strong enough rov. 60%, 70%, 80%, 98%. Rov, you can understand, might have different increments. What do we need in most of halakha? Most of halakha we need, we presume, a pretty strong rov, but not absolute certainty. For example, this halakha is most notably quoted in Shulchan Aruch, in halakhas of treifas. According to the Rambam and Shulchan Aruch, there are around 100 permutations of treifas that can exist in an animal. 100 different things that can be wrong. You can have a split lung, you can have water on the brain, you can have a perforated cranium, perforated spleen, different issues that can happen in an animal. Yet if you don't have any commercial shraptois, any place to sheft, how many treifas are checked for? One. Only one. One out of 100. Why? Says the Shulchan Aruch in the next source, Ein tzarich livdok achar shum treifos min astam. We don't need to check for any treifos. Chutz min areya. Except for the lung, tzarich livdok, that we need to check, because it's pretty common. And this is the halakha in Shulchan Aruch quoted from the Rishonim, called Miot HaMatzui. The halacha is, we presume, in most areas of halacha, rove is enough. Majority is enough. But midrabanan, we need a pretty good majority. What's a pretty good majority? According to most postim, this halacha means around 90%. If you have 90% certainty that you're not violating halacha, that itself is enough. The only trefa that appears more than 10% of the time that doesn't have 90% certainty is an adhesion or a cut in the lung. Other trefas might appear, but it's so far off, so little of a concern, we don't even need to check for it altogether. So for this halacha in Shulchan Aruch, as Rosh Hashanah points out in his article and other postman points out, we have a general rule in halacha. Most areas of halacha need approximately a 90% certainty. We need the minority to be what's called miut she'eino motzui. An insignificant minority. 90%. Which would mean that according to this halacha, even if the mitzvah of nishmartem ma'oz v'nafsho seichem, watching oneself, is a mitzvah min ha'Torah, what do I need to do to protect myself from danger? Make sure that anything I do does not have at least a 10% chance of hurting myself. In halacha, most areas of halacha need 90% certainty. That would be enough. To an extent, it's a bit scary. It's not so different than playing Russian roulette. Russian roulette, if you think about it, a standard revolver has 6 slots. One of them has a bullet. A person might kill himself, or a person might win a lot of money. Now, that's a 1 in 6 chance, not exactly 1 in 10, but 1 in 10 is not so far off. This gives us pretty big leeway as far as what's considered dangerous. As long as there's approximately a 90% chance that I'm going to be safe, niyach en amatsui, I can engage in almost any behavior I want. So it would seem. With one caveat. So this caveat, we have the vampire halacha. Well, not exactly. According to some researchers, the biggest phobia that exists in contemporary society is the phobia of premature interment. Of a person being interred in the ground when they think it's posthumously while he or she is still alive. Biggest phobia that exists. People are concerned about that. In fact, there have been inventions that have been made already since the 50s, 60s with tubes in coffins in case a person, God forbid, is buried alive, to make sure they can communicate and have a method of breathing until they get themselves out. Some speculate that's where vampires came from. The myths of vampires, which exist across cultures, might have come from the fact that there were people that were interred when medicine was not so developed. People were interred while they were still alive, and they had to fight themselves, fight the dirt, fight the coffins to get out. They emerged bloody and pale, and they returned back to their families, let's say, and they were shadows who they really were. They looked bloody, they looked injured, and they looked like they had risen from the dead. Some speculate that's where vampires perhaps came from. Some speculate and say that according to science, a person, if he's interred while he's alive, would be no longer alive after approximately 5 minutes. Therefore, it's not a good source for vampires. Either way, this halacha, this concept, made itself into the pages of Shulchan Aruch. The Pesach Shuva quotes in the next source that the Chasam Sofer was asked by another contemporary sefer who quoted from a sefer on science that there's a percentage of people that are interred alive. Therefore, although the halacha is, we know in Eretz Yisrael they're more machped on this, even in America we try to be machped on this, a person should be buried as quickly as possible, says this posek, quoting from other svarim and from doctors, it's a good idea to institute a 3-day waiting period. No person should be buried until after 3 days after they're pronounced dead, because maybe, just maybe, they're still alive. Of course, it goes against the halacha of burying a person right away. Says the Chasam Sofer, no way, that's not allowed. But says this other posek, what do you mean? Even in halacha, in the Masechta Smachos, the Brisa in Masechta Smachos talks about the fact that once a person was interred, and they walked past the graveyard, they heard him knocking, and they let him out. So you see in history, such a concept exists. Says the Chasam Sofer, maybe you're right. Hayuv de Maseches Machos, this story in Maseches Machos, the second to a source on page 2, who mikra ba'alma, is one Baba Maisa that once happened. It might have been true, happened only once. Mimitrim ha'rechotim echad elashanim, it happens once in 1,000 years. It's not even a minority of minority. It's such a small amount. That's even more than the robe we talked about, 1 in 10. It's 1 in a million. 1 in a million, even in matters of pikuach nefesh, in matters of God, that we might be interring a person alive. It's so uncommon, we don't need to be choshish for it altogether. So here we see another idea of robe. Not just 1 in 10. Even a person would argue that we have a requirement to protect ourselves corporally, from, God forbid, endangering our lives, more than the normal halakha. Chamira sakanta meisura. You have to protect yourself more. Still, even in matters of endangering one's life, if it's such a far-off chance, there's no need to be makbid altogether. So we see that we've got this dangerous behavior. Based on most areas of halakha, it would be 1 in 10. And even if you want to be really makbid, if it's very, very uncommon to become dangerous, then it's not a concern. Nevertheless, in the last source of page 2, the Noda of Yehuda was asked about the following situation. It was not so common because in most Jews in Europe were unfortunately indigent. You might be familiar with stories about the Nebuch, the Jewish serfs that were meshuba to the pirates, the wealthy landowner that owned the bars, gave very heavy taxes, and was very mean to those that were in his jurisdiction. Yet, the Nodid was asked, what about a very rich Jew who fell upon a large piece of land? In Europe, what do you do for entertainment? You have a lot of land. You don't hunt him. They asked the Nodid Yehuda, is it appropriate? Am I allowed to go hunt him? So the Nodid Yehuda, it's not a very good job for a nice Jewish boy. We don't do that. So the Nodid Yehuda, Me'ata, Eich yach netzatzmo ish Yehudi, how can a Jewish person enter himself? L'makom gedulei chayos ra'os, to a place where there are wild animals? Says another Yehuda, you're right, some people might need to do so for parnasa. The Pesukim say, we have a pasuk called Be'elav Kunoseyes Napsho. The Torah ratifies the fact that a person is allowed to endanger one's life for needs of parnasa. For example, merchants, until recently, traveling the high seas is very dangerous, but for parnasa you're allowed to. But for sport, says another Yehuda, that likewise is a violation of V'nishmartim Od V'nafsho Seichem. Part of the Nodid Yehuda is speaking halachically. Part is also hashtafa. For no reason, why are you doing that? It's not appropriate.
How about
the spotter? So that's how the rifles work. If the rifles are pretty effective, if the guys have rifles, it would be okay. But you're right. It's a good question. What about safari? So let's wait till we see this halacha ma'aseh and we'll revisit the issue of safari. That's also true. So do they have tsar? When you're shooting it, is it instantaneous death?
You're supposed to.
So the Nodid talks about that issue. We presume, although we can't really tell Peter this, we presume that tzav olechayim for the benefit of a person is okay. Often. Depends. Sport might not be okay, but there was a big machokas. There's a machokas Adayim Yamazeh in two different communities within Klal Yisrael. What about having disturbana goose? To have, if you want to have pate de foie gras. So foie gras comes from geese that are force-fed, that are not allowed to move, and their livers swell, tzav olechayim, and when they're shechted, we have what's known as foie gras, which is very, very expensive. There is kosher foie gras, but there's machlokas in Europe, machlokas even nowadays, among the kashrus organizations, is that kosher is an increased chance of treifus. But we presume in general that as far as tzav olechayim, that's okay, because animals exist for human benefit. And if you're going to do it, although according to some kashrus organizations, we don't like veal for kashrus reasons, for tzav olechayim reasons, it would seem that would be okay. It would seem. You're right, it might be achzaris, it might not be correct, but strictly speaking, it's hard to argue that it's halakhically tzav olechayim. It's a very good point. Before we bring this halakha ma'aseh, there's one other source that it's important to assess. Because so far we've seen that the Roman hegemon, quoted by the Gemara, And the Shulchan Aruch tell us that halacha ma'isa, a person is not allowed to endanger himself or herself. However, that halacha is mitigated by the fact that this is a 1 in 10% chance, we said, or maybe even 1 in a million chance, 1 in several thousand, that a person is going to endanger oneself, then it's okay. Even if one can endanger oneself, if it's pretty unreasonable, one still is allowed to engage in that behavior. There's one other halacha. For most of our sojourn in the wilderness, we did not practice the mitzvah of Mila. Even though Mila is a mitzvah in HaTorah, says the Gemara, in the very first year the Jews were in the wilderness, and the last year they did Mila, but the years in between, they didn't do the mitzvah of Mila. Why not? Says the Gemara, because the climate conditions were not favorable. Apparently, in order to be healthy after Mila, a person needs to have the right sun and the right wind. Both of those were lacking while we were in the Midbar. And says the Gemara, not only then, a person knows what climate you need to heal properly from Mila. A person nowadays should say, I don't want to do Mila on my son, because there's no wind. There's no sun. Maybe it was the right climate then. It's only if the climate, she was before the Midbar. She apparently knew that it was the climate conditions were okay. But if the climatic conditions are not correct, you're allowed to say, I'm not doing Mila. But says the Gemara, that's only in theory. In practice, everyone does it. Come on! Everyone does Mila. No one looks at that and says, the weather doesn't look favorable for Mila today, let's not do Mila. So the Gemara, once everyone does it, you have to jump on the bandwagon. Therefore, Yoma De'iva, a day which is cloudy, Yoma De'shusa, or a day that does not have the correct wind, we don't do Mila on it. Below Mesukhrinan day, we don't bloodlet on it. But says Rav Papa, that's only in the olden days. But Ha'idna, nowadays, the Dashu Beirabas, Dashu Barabim, that everyone trampled on it, everyone does it. No one is careful with this matter of safety. Shomer Tisa'im, Hashem. Hashem watches those that are simpletons. This halacha in Shulchan Aruch is telling us that if Ma, come on, everyone's doing it, has halakhic basis. If everyone's doing something, indeed, we're allowed to, lahalakha, do things that would otherwise be considered dangerous. Shomer pisayim Hashem. Hashem watches the simple things. We've seen so far there's a concept of danger. If it's reasonably dangerous, one has to be steer clear away. On the other hand, we do have a concept of Shomer pisayim Hashem. Hashem watches you if everyone's doing it. What does it mean, halakha l'maisa? In 1981, the Moshe Feinstein was asked by Dr. Fred Rasner, who's known for his many works, both in halakha as well as in medicine, assistant dean of Einstein. Rav Moshe, can we please ask her to smoke him? So Dr. Rasner, you can almost hear the kvetch in the tshuva, Nebuch. I work in a hospital. I see people who suffer from lung cancer, from throat cancer, from so many diseases, because they smoke. Lay down the law! Prohibit smoking. Post a kador. Rav Moshe Feinstein, halacha b'maisa. Sister Rav Moshe, I'm sorry, I can't. Why? Let's read the tshuva together and see Rav Moshe's phenomenal approach. Matters of smoking cigarettes is similar to other matters of danger. And says Rav Moshe, those that become sick from smoking, is only a small percentage. The kolshetain chalos mizeh besarts on cancer, and certainly those that become sick with cancer, v'od machlos mesukanos, and also God forbid with other dangerous diseases, hutatan biyoser, is very small. Aye, Dr. Rasner, v'af shemalas bodo, even though you, dear doctor, ra harbe cholim, you see many doctors, shemalas bodo hurofi, because you're a doctor, but into beit cholim, and you're in the hospital, v'roa, and you see kemat b'chol yom, almost every day, cholim b'sartan areya, people that are sick with lung cancer, v'agaron, and throat cancer, and also other diseases, Shinimsu Yosef Eilush and Ashim Sudarios that are found with more of a prevalence with those that smoke. It's not only Einstein, it's true in most hospitals. Yikamakam says that Rav Moshe, think about the percentages. Vadai, Kol HaCholim HaNimtzam Beit HaCholim, all those that are sick that are found in hospitals, percentage wise, how many people are sick because they have other problems? How many sick with throat cancer and lung cancer? And even if you tell me those looking between those that have cancer in the hospital and others, think about how many people smoke. They're sitting at home smoking and being happy. It's such a small amount compared to these, the Alma. Many that are totally well are not sick altogether. With such a small percentage, Aminan we say, Shomer Tisa'im Hashem. Everyone's doing it. Hashem watches those that are being silly. There's no prohibition to smoke. Rav Moshe does say it's best not to start. He says it's not advisable. But I can't say that it's absolutely prohibited according to the Torah. Before you jump out of your seats, what's Rav Moshe saying? If you look carefully in the background in the Teshuvah, Rav Moshe is advancing a very unique approach. Rav Moshe's presumption is, this is based on the medical knowledge that he had, that if action A is dangerous, only if I have a certain propensity, let's call that B, in my body, and only then will I have C, we can't say that's prohibited. For example, Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked in the very beginning of Dar Yisharim, which Baruch Hashem now has made tremendous advances in obliterating almost completely genetic diseases in the Ashkenazi community. He was asked if one has a requirement to test oneself genetically before he or she gets married. So Rav Moshe, there's no requirement. This is based on the knowledge he had then, perhaps before it became so nafutz, so common. So Rav Moshe, a person can get married, only if he or she has gene B, will then see results, they'll have a very difficult life. But they don't have a requirement to check if they have that gene called B. Meaning you can A, get married, if B, you have the gene, then C, you'll have a difficult life. There's no need to check if you have B or not. You can rely on Shomer Tisayim Hashem. Hashem watches those that are being silly. Now again, that's only before it became so common to check genetically. But Rav Moshe holds that if B is a variable, there's no need to prohibit A, because C might result. What does that mean in terms of smoking? Rav Moshe was under the impression that A, I can smoke. If B, I have a genetic propensity to get cancer, chas v'shalom, then C, I'll get cancer, chas v'shalom. But if I don't have the propensity, I won't. So Rav Moshe was presuming in 1981 that there's no prohibition to ask for smoking A just because I might have B, that gene, because I don't know if C is going to result. Now, nowadays, we know that's not necessarily true. Before your question, one might argue, although this is something which is majorly influenced by the tobacco industry and the lobbying in Washington, in the 80s, what did cigarette packages say on them? Cigarette smoking may be hazardous to your health. May be hazardous to your health. So in those days, in the days of May, that was Ramosha. A might be hazardous because of B, then C. But nowadays, we know, Baruch Hashem, it says on every package of cigarette smoking causes cancer. A to B, that's it. So, I would argue, Rav Moshe was basing upon the knowledge that was presented in 1981, that A leads to C only if B is there. So, Rav Moshe, you don't need to be choshesh that you have B. You don't need to be choshesh that you have the gene. But indeed, if you do, it would be inappropriate. Nowadays, I think even Rav Moshe would ask for smoking, A leads to C, when to not smoke. Two questions, man?
That is the function of what the probability of B is, right? The
robe
of B.
Correct. Exactly. Rav Moshe was presuming now in those days also that B is not. That's what I said as far as, let's say, genetic testing. Now it's so nothless, it's so common, it might be that Rav Moshe would say you should check genetically also. In fact, I asked some of Rav Moshe's family, according to some in Rav Moshe's family, Rav Moshe would never say you have a requirement to check, but it's advisable. Many people in his family did check genetically before they got married. Rav Moshe didn't want to say it's halacha because you don't need to be choshesh if you have B necessarily. You're right, it would be a function of the probability.
What happens when Rav and Straw acts in a behavior that's dangerous? So let's say, you can't take my response, but let's say, going back to turn out the fine, 60% of the population is smoking, or even greater. 1940, men, women are smoking. Would that change, would that influence stop and the law?
So I would argue that based on the careful reading of Rav Moshe, built upon the part we have here and the part that's in context, Rav Moshe says, if we know this is dangerous, then it would be also even if Dashu Be'erabim, even if most people are doing it. Because Dashu Be'erabim, the fact that Shomer Pesam Hashem Hashem watches those that are being silly, is only if there are variables. It might be prudent not to do it, but everyone's doing it, rely on the fact that Hashem protects us. But if we know this is dangerous, then it's absolutely prohibited.
So just a follow-up question. So even though the psak would then put Rov Yisrael being over an Isur, because the psak would then retroactively do it, in that case of Shomanasha Sechem, would override putting Kal Yisrael on the Isur?
In my understanding of Moshe, absolutely, correct. That we would say that once you know, if there's concrete knowledge, such as nowadays, there's evidence and evidence and evidence that cigarette smoking, Rachman Hassan, terminates a person's life prematurely, then it would be absolutely usur, even if Moshe Feinstein.
What about the mitzvah?
If it's a mitzvah?
Like the
tzitzit of a pet? That's a true question. So it's interesting. We're not going to get into the major controversy now, but we mentioned that the Chum Sofer says that if there's a chance of 1 in 1,000 that you're going to be endangering someone, or one in a strong amount, there's no need to be mapped. In those days, he was trying to fight for mitzvah b'peh. You should do it. We don't need it medically. No, but if there's 1 in 1,000,000 chance, we don't need to be mapped. The Maram Shit argued and says, even 1 in 1,000,000 is worth possessing Kal Yisrael. But in those days, mitzvah b'peh was because we thought it was good to do it. What about now? The dark bit might be dangerous the other way. It's a very strong discussion that is important to analyze in light of some of these sources. Absolutely. One might argue that if there's a remote chance, it might be better not to. As the Chassam Sofer was willing to say in theory that we would do it if there was a more of a valid concern of a person being interred prematurely, one shouldn't. One should actually wait 3 days before interring a person. He just said, it's so far off, there's no need to be mastered. But if it was, one might say one indeed should be careful. Yes? He's not. He definitely doesn't advise it, but he can say the letter of the law is a Jewish person may not smoke based on his medical knowledge. Correct. He does. He's saying those that are hooked, and he does not advise it, for sure. In fact, I remember I was also learning Yeshiva Shara Torah before I came to Risa Chachamim, and in Shara Torah, Rav Zelot Epstein was the Rosh Yeshiva, and he, when I was first there in Shara Torah, Rav Zelot Epstein's beard, beautiful white beard, was yellow because he smoked cigars. And then one day he said, no, I can't. And he stopped smoking cigars. It was very common in those days, and as awareness became more advanced, people indeed. Yeah, it's a common thing. Even some issues in America also. It is hard to understand based on the sources we've seen so far. So Rav Moshe was just in 81. He didn't say. Some more common folks can have, but we'll see the next source, the person who says, Nahol Zbard, it's Usser Lagami. This past weekend was the Adudah Convention. It was supposed to be Thanksgiving weekend. As usually you have the OU and Adudah Conventions around the same time, although the OU I think is every other year. It's nice to have Asus and Klal Yisrael. You can pick, everyone's having conventions together at the same time. I was there for Motzei Shabbos, it was Mavel Malka. I was there, the first time I was ever at the Adudah Convention, and there are people that rent booths around the areas that you walk in the lobby, very important organizations that help Klal Yisrael. One of the organizations was an association called Efrat Krib. Efrat Krib is an organization which specifically tries to target the problem of Nebuch, those in Eretz Yisrael that don't see themselves as able to carry pregnancy to term because of financial reasons, and they give them psychological as well as financial encouragement. And they've saved thousands of babies. There's another organization called Just One Life, which does the same thing. I'm not sure why the two exist, just the more babies that we save, the better. But they gave out pamphlets on Motzei Shabbos. I've gotten the pamphlets in the mail before, but I was reading the pamphlet again, and I saw it's really all the work of one person, Dr. Eli J. Shusheim. The name stayed in my head because before I lived in Seif, I used to live in Washington Heights, and Shusheim sounds like a Yekusha name, so it stayed in my head. And I was reading the Tshuva from the Tzitz Eliezer, written in 1982, so of all people who? Dr. Eliyahu Yosef Shusheim. Same person who started Efrat Krib 30 years later, is quoting the Tzitz Eliezer from 1982, in the Tshuva that he asked about smoking. Tzitz Eliezer, Posuk in Yerushalayim, can you ask the smoking? Says Tzitz Eliezer, oh, can I ever? The bottom of page 3, L'arzeh, in view of what I've said, that is dangerous, Nira Boror, it's clear, L'lo Tzel Shel Safek, takes me to the first time Boror means clear, without any shadow of a doubt. He's making sure it's quite clear here. Ein Makom, there is no place, L'hisbarech B'leiv, to be confident in oneself, parentheses, Tefi Shachayim Rotzim Lomar King, like others want to say, who's that? With Moshe. Uharos the Pasukim. Ki hayo since smoking Rabim Dashim Bo, many do it, Im Chain, therefore, Yesh Lahachil El Zeh, we can say about this, Hamaymer Chazal, what Chazal said, Bekam Mokamus in many places, Amin Ed Olam, Bumakam Shish, Lachosh Masakana, place where concerned of danger, Shepasim Pasim Bo Amr, they said, Sayedna, now Dashim Bey Rabim, everyone does it, Shomer Psaim Hashem. Hashem protects those that are being silly. So it says, Eliezer, no. As Mr. Winsky pointed out, this is dangerous. Objectively, absolutely absurd. Everyone does it. I don't care. Therefore, Spirit, before your question, let's just see the end of the Teshuvah. Skipping a few lines, the bold again. Shapir yishmakum leser ishan al-pi din Torah. One can actively prohibit smoking according to the Torah. And so this is Eliezer, ukumoka in the last line of page 3, kishma ashanim b'mokomos tiburim. What if I am exposed to secondhand smoke? I can actually ask the person who's smoking to please extinguish the cigarette. In fact, in a later tshuva, the Tzitz Eliezer was asked by a Rav who used this tshuva in his shul, Tzitz Eliezer, how can we be so soft about secondhand smoke? You shouldn't say you're allowed to ask the person to put it out. You should say, also, you can't smoke even secondhand because it's dangerous. So Tzitz Eliezer, really, you're right. You really shouldn't smoke. You can even ask the person else to put it out. I was just being a little bit more soft in the tshuva. So Tzitz Eliezer, first-hand smoke and second-hand smoke, absolutely usher l'halacha, one may not do so. Good question. Sorry? It's a very, very serious, unfortunately. It's hard to, especially as evidence increases, it's hard to say that really one... It's true. Yeah, so it's funny. You know the first person on the books really to ask for smoking before it was even known to be dangerous? The Chafetz Chaim. That was well before studies came out to prohibit smoking. So the Chafetz Chaim, what are you doing? You're addicting yourself to something? Addictions are never good in halacha. Hashtafically, that means every day you leave the Beis Medrash and smoke for half an hour? How much time in your life are you wasting smoking? Addictions? We serve one Chafetz Baruch. We don't serve smoke. We don't serve cigarettes, we don't serve coffee, we can't be addicted. So Hashtafli, he was bothered, like you're saying, that the makhla, but he didn't know necessarily the health hazards. In fact, in Shuvas, they talk about smoking on Yontif, maybe it's brios, it's for health because it helps digestion. Well, it might help digestion, but hurt other parts of the body. Right, that's right, so that's all the discussion they have, but they talk about the benefits it has because of digestion. But nowadays we know, it would seem quite clearly, and I'm arguing, I think quite conclusively, that even Rav Moshe Feinstein nowadays would say it's absolutely usur for a person to smoke. There's no idea from Rav Chaim Hashem if there's incontrovertible evidence that says a person may not do so. It's January 1st, almost midwinter vacation time, the elementary schools. What is the most favorite activity during, in many communities for midwinter vacation? Go skiing. I never went skiing. But I have to say, as I was growing up, I was always jealous of those that came back with their coats on and they had that nice bright tag on their zipper, the steelist tag. And I never understood why you really need the tag just for the steelist. Why is there a din that for the entire winter you have to keep that on your zipper? Just to show, hey, I went skiing, you didn't. But my Issa, it's very common to go skiing. Is that dangerous or not? What we've seen, according to Halacha, we quoted two sources that would shed light on what it means to be dangerous. In theory, walking outside is dangerous. Yet we discussed the fact that in most areas of halacha, miut she'en motzoi, 1 in 10% chance is okay, or even matters of being more serious, 1 in 1,000,000, 1 in a very, very strong 1,000, that was the vampire tshuva of the Chasam Sofer. If it's very, very uncommon, even in matters of pitoch nefesh, a person is allowed to be lenient. So what are the statistics on skiing? According to the National Association of Ski Lodges, from their most recent publication, According to the National Steelers Association, on the last source on page 4, during the past 10 years, around 41.5 people have died skiing, snowboarding on average per year. Yet, look in the non-bowls, how many people go skiing a year? 51 million. So approximately 41 to 51 million is almost 1 in a million chance of fatalities during skiing.
Skier days.
Okay, does that mean, that would mean...
That means divide the number of days by number of skiers. So maybe it's 20 million.
Still, okay, still pretty... Thank you for the statistics. Still, it's pretty uncommon. And now, for some reason, look at serious injuries. Serious injuries, rachmaninoflan paralysis, serious head, other serious injuries, occur at a rate of 44.7 per year. For some reason, I don't know why, it's good that 2012 is over. During the 2011-2012 season, there were 510 serious injuries. Usually there's an average of 44 per year, and 2011-2012 is a doozy, there were 10 times that amount. I don't know why. Could be the statistics are skewed. Either way, we have, let's say, 54 fatalities, 510 serious injuries. One might argue the chances of a person having a serious injury during skiing is one in several thousand. Really very, 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 very small. One might argue, though they don't talk about this, it would depend on what one defines as skiing. As you pointed out, skier days, is skier days bunny slopes or skier days going down the highest cliffs in Utah? Not necessarily so simple. And one might add that the Isser of Nishmartim, the requirement to protect oneself, is not only from fatalities, God forbid, or serious injuries, but even broken bone. There are almost always people that walk around on crutches, proudly needing to heal from their ski trips. Broken bones. So even if one adds that, it's hard to say there's a significant chance one's going to be injured in skiing enough to really prohibit it for halacha. However, there's a hashkafa component. The Rambam begins Mishneh Torah towards the very beginning. We have Hilchos Deos. Hilchos Deos is the hashkafa and pseudo halacha of the Rambam. It's halacha which is couched in terms of hashkafa. Very important concepts, which the Rambam tells us some of the philosophy on life. So the Rambam, in the beginning of Perek Daled of Hilchos Deos, Hol v'heyos haguf bari v'shalom midarkei Hashem hu, since the body being healthy is one of the ways of Hashem, sheharei, because yefshar sheyaveno yeda davar, it's impossible to know something, midiyas habore, about Hashem, v'chole, if a person is sick in bed, one can't be an active Jew. V'fichach, therefore, tzarech l'srachit adam atzmo, person needs to distance himself midvarim ha'ma'avdin esaguf, from matters that destroy one's soul. This is to an extent meta-halacha. It's not the absolute halacha, but it's hashtafa. Don't do things which are going to make yourself have more of a propensity for getting sick. Similarly, the note of Yudah said before as far as hunting, if you need it for parnasa, that's okay. But barring that, just for sport, it's inappropriate. Based on this concept, there are some postim that say that a person should not go skiing. It's hard to say it means the halacha or halacha, since halachically, there's a strong, strong rove that you'll be nichnas v'shalom, fiyat v'shalom. You'll enter the sfilaj, okay, and you'll leave in one piece. But there are those that say that for sport, it's inappropriate to engage in behavior which is out of the ordinary. Again, v'halacha, it's hard to say that it's asur v'halacha. But hashkafa, the concept of Hilchos Deos, it's appropriate to protect oneself. There are those that say that it's inappropriate.
You said the same thing about playing basketball, playing soccer?
So you have to do research. Is it really, is...
I would assume that there's probably statistically significant, I mean...
More than, you'd say as much as steam? What do you think? Anyone think basketball is as dangerous? So hockey depends on how you do hockey. Ice hockey is different, not because of the puck, but because of the chevra sometimes.
But when it comes to risk-benefit analysis, you're always looking at the probability of an injury and the severity of the injury if it occurs fewer times.
So it's hard to know, because if the halakha of the nishmartim would really mean that a person has to wash oneself, it would mean really a person has to wash oneself even from getting a broken bone. It's not really so severe because you have to protect their body. So That's not according to the statistics, but that might be, there's still a higher chance, but still. I'm not sure. Phil, I'm not sure if that's really true as far as the concept of basketball. You might say that to an extent, you always need to have relaxation. One might argue that if the person really needs to ski, might be more of a reason to do it. Like Ben Azid, if you need to turn out stuff. There's a beautiful article from Aaron Lichtenstein that came out years ago, and he talks about B'nai Torah playing basketball. He says that when a person plays basketball, he uses that as a muscle for all of life. Often, we're not interested in every, you don't have to dribble, say, Lishma, Lishma, Lishma. The general reason you play basketball is to help yourself relax, to help yourself be more healthy, and you don't have to dribble every second saying, I'm doing this L'shem Shemayim. And it's a beautiful article where he outlines the fact that we can do many behaviors, which in general, Lishma, even though I'm not doing this specific action, Lishma, and this step, Lishma, so if one would need to relax, maybe it is appropriate. But this Rambam, which is a very important hashkafa, has to be taken seriously, and it's a consideration.
Just as a
That's very true. In fact, they point out they're trying to now spread the movement called Woods for Kids. People should wear better head protection when they go skiing. So you're right, these take into all concerns. You're saying it might even be smaller because people are doing things that are inappropriate. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a very good point. Oh. Before Safari, let's get to one last point, then we'll get to bring the Safari. I never went on skiing, never went on Safari, all these things that maybe I should now. It's well known that cell phones are dangerous. They're dangerous to fathers who spend time texting instead of playing with their kids. They're dangerous to spouses who spend time talking instead of eating dinner with their families. Dangerous to friends who text instead of interacting. But what about health dangers? Are there acute dangers to health by using cell phones? If you Google it, there are some websites that swear the most dangerous thing contemporary man does is use a cell phone. The radiation, the abnormalities that can occur to fetuses and to the brain and to one's body are so terrible, one should never use a cell phone. Wi-Fi, internet, forget about it. Maybe we have a chiyus b'choshesh for that. There are some studies that have been done that try to show that cell phones indeed are dangerous. Is that considered danger? What would you think based on what we've seen today? Well, we have a chiyuv and a shmartim to protect oneself. Yet if there's a small chance, there's no need to be makbid. For that, we can rely on the FDA. According to the FDA and their website, so cell phones pose a health hazard. Many people are concerned that cell phone radiation will cause cancer or other serious health hazards. The weight of scientific evidence does not link cell phones with any health problems. Based on that, one might argue, yes, there might be some studies which might come out in the future that will say that cell phone use is dangerous. But this seems to be a perfect example of Shomer Pesaim Hashem. People are doing it, and there's no evidence to the contrary, although there is some small evidence, but the overwhelming scientific research seems to say that it's okay. Maybe Tafi is a little bit dangerous. Shomer, Pesayim, Hashem. I can rely on the fact that everyone else is doing it. So we've seen so far, smoking, that's a violation of the Nishmaritim, it would seem according to the Poskim. Skiing depends on the need, depends on the statistics. It would seem statistically that is okay. Aside from the astrophic approach, maybe there's no need if one doesn't really need to relax. And the other extreme, cell phones seem to be mutter. That's Shomer Pesayim Hashem. Hashem protects those that follow everyone else. Now what about Safari? So what are the stats on Safari? Is a person, is there danger that is associated with Safari? My impression is that Safari is pretty safe. Guides have rifles. It's the excitement. It makes it pretty fun. So what about fatalities? Like, does it happen? So it would seem that it would be a perfect example of, it's like the skiing approach. If one doesn't need to, why not? But if one wants to enjoy, there's a famous story about Rav Hirsch. Rav Hirsch was of course, was in Frankfurt, was in Germany, and he made a point before he died to go see the Alps. Why? He said, you know, I'm going to come after 120 years to Shemayim. Hashem is going to say to me, Shamsun Raphael, dude, you see my Alps? And there's a certain beauty to that. If one should take in Hashem's gorgeous creations, there's validity. So everything has to be balanced. If it's just because one wants to say he did it, it would be inappropriate to steal, inappropriate perhaps to go on sorry. But if one's going to really gain, there's what he said for doing so. The other question? Oh no.
10 years later, the University of Chicago says yes. Every 5 years, you look at the media, and you see this is not good for your health, that's good for your health, that's good for your health, that's not good for your health.
Absolutely. You're right. Those are all examples, like cell phones, of Shomer Psalm Hashem. What's mainstream doing? If there's a small amount of evidence that seems to say one way, but most people are doing it, there we say Hashem protects those that are doing things that are inappropriate. Exactly. That's a great example, like the cell phones. We don't need to be cautious for every journal that comes out on Google Scholar that's going to tell us something which is going to be incorrect. Yes, in the back.
I
see. So for sure, it's a great mitzvah to do. It would depend. What's the...
You can take advantage
of what the shul, you can bring the shul. I see. Okay. So based on my knowledge of motorcycling, it would depend on how a person drives, what a person wears, and a person's general conduct. So you can't use stats, you have to know yourself. Is it? So then it would be based upon that evidence. In fact, although you might be unique in America, in Eretz Israel, it's very common to use a motorcycle. So one might say, well, many people do it. If they do it sensibly, then it should be okay.
I could be different standards for your own health and someone else's health. I know that, you know, our bodies aren't ours, so therefore we're like someone else for ourselves.
Right.
But you're in control of yourself. Let's say I ski and I'm so bad I'm going to cause you to have a problem when I'm skiing down the slope.
Yes.
So is there a different standard between...
Absolutely. So you bring up 2 points. Number one, if a person knows that he's very good, one might argue, barring cases, God forbid, of avalanches, that a person can say, oh, I'm not in the statistic. I'm better than the stats. The stats are based upon averages. And similarly, if a person is very bad, a person has to be mocked for himself, and for sure, for others, like secondhand smoke, a person has to be mocked.
Sure, that's standard.
Right. No, so if I know, if there's a concern that I have that I might injure someone else, absolutely, then I would not be able to do it, even if I'm going to emerge unsafe.
Even if it's unlikely?
Well, no, it would be the same percentages. I mean, if I presume that danger to others... The Sitzel Yezer quotes in the same tshuva that if there's a certain small percentage, let's say 5%, 10%, that a person is going to injure others, one doesn't have to be mastered. If you see in other areas in Chosh Mishpat, if I have a small bar in my Rishus, that chance that no one's going to come here, I don't need to be careful with it. So we have the same percentages that would apply to others as well. Question?
Is it unusual that, like, the student travels, they're making a bracha,
so you're pointing out the idea of Tzivos HaDerech. So why do we say Tzivos HaDerech? So it would seem you're making a good point that things that are normal, Shomer Psalm Hashem means that if we do normal things, you can't say that's really considered dangerous. According to Rabbi Soloveitchik, the idea of Tzivos HaDerech is really based on a person's general fear, not based on stats. Rav Shechter wrote to Nefesh HaRav that Rabbi Soloveitchik, when he used to come from Boston to New York weekly, at first his ticket always used to say Joe Solo. In those days, he didn't even have ID, so Joe Solo, no relation to Han Solo, but Joe Solo, Rabbi Soloveitchik, used to use a short name on his tickets. And when Joe Solo, Rabbi Soloveitchik, used to come to New York, first he started off saying Tzivos HaDerech. He was scared. That was an abnormal thing. Then after a while, he was so used to it that he didn't say Tzivos HaDerech anymore. So it seems that's really a function of how scared I feel. I need to daven more, not because ostensibly it's a concern as far as the percentages.
I heard a very difficult story in the 1939-1940s on what is Kiblinka, the people who jumped trains. So one of the people on the train, my grandfather, based on this passage, Shmasa Hoseichem, did not jump the train. My father actually jumped the train.
Wow.
So to use the pasuk, he has no idea if he's going to die.
Wow.
He has no idea what's going to happen when he gets there. And I don't know exactly what period of time he's going to. But he says if he jumps the train, he definitely will die. And actually this was made for my father.
So wow.
My father jumped the train actually twice, but
wow.
he actually fell physically with his constantly jumping the trains because of what his father had said.
Wow. It happens to be that you're making a very good point, which is that barring any other evidence, we presume that Sheva al Tasa Adis. It's better, if you don't know what the future is going to bring, often it's better to remain with inertia. It's like your grandfather did.
But that's the conflict. My father was the result of the survivor, and my grandfather was the result of responsibility.
It's very hard to know, especially in such a difficult situation.
Right.
It's very hard to know. It's hard to imagine their percentages one or the other. We do have a general rule that it might be correct not to do anything Sheva al Tasa.
The implication in modern world is the army, various things, you know, A to Z, you know, no limit.
Absolutely. So in theory, in a more rigorous mathematical world, it would be based upon percentages. Of course, the human mind doesn't work that way. There's a fascinating professor who is a brilliant professor, an Israeli-American professor named Dan Ariely. Dan Ariely wrote a book called Predictable Irrationality, and he is a bucky in the concepts of how we make decisions correctly or incorrectly. And he points out how in our very DNA, we have the idea of Sheva al Tasa, how we don't do things, because if we have a decision to make, we'd rather make no decision than do something. One might argue that there's a certain beauty to that in the way Hashem made us. That's something beneficial, that we have a certain protection innately to not doing things that might be dangerous, like the Nishmartim, like your grandfather did. But it's a tough situation, as you're pointing out.
What's the punishment for violating Nishmartim as much as
it would seem, according to the Ram, that's a lot. It's a negative commandment that in the days of the Sanhedrin, one should get malchus for, in theory.
Is that being warned against?
Maybe. The Ram writes that in some situations, even without being warned, you can get malchus margus. Malchus midrabanon. If you do things that are on the books dangerous, you can get rabbinic lashes just for that.
Would you say, based on statistics of air travel, that we shouldn't be staying in Gomel anymore and when we come back, let's say, overseas?
Would that be with the rub? It's a very good question. It's funny. The Halacha in Shulchan Aruch says, from the Gemara, Arba Sichim Mahodos, four people need to thank Hashem for things. It doesn't say because it's dangerous. It would seem, if you do these actions, that itself requires you to thank Hashem. There's a Machokas, the Bristers in the rest of the world, is air travel considered traveling across the ocean? Since I jump over the ocean, is that included in the halacha? It's a machlokas. If you'd argue, like many do, that that's considered traveling across the ocean, it's not necessarily because the oceans are dangerous, but because four people that are involved in this situation have to thank Hashem. So therefore, it's not necessarily a function of danger. It's a function of that I was in an X. Chazal said, in four situations, you have to bring a carbon toda in the olden days, and therefore you have to say a bracha, even if it's not necessarily dangerous, such as, for, let's say a person is incarcerated for brief time. In contemporary city jails, there's no danger necessarily, yet one might probably should say a gomel, because that's the halacha, even if it's not dangerous, per se.
The halacha was written based on the time when those were asked. There was no other way of going across the ocean except through the danger of the water.
Correct.
And in prison, even a few short times, in the hands of those people who ran in prison, it was very dangerous.
Correct. So I'm just pointing out that but once the halacha is codified, it's not necessarily a function of danger, it's those actions themselves objectively going to require a person to do so. So we should all be zocheh, as the New Year secularly starts, they say by some of the Chassidish Rebbes that they used to say a good yar even today. Why? Not that we chas v'shalom our mishapes ourselves to the Jewish New Year, but whenever we have an idea of this chasvus, whenever there's something new, it's good to seize the moment. We should be zocheh to have this chachos, the newness, as the year starts in the secular calendar of a year of invigorated with Torah of Avodas Hashem, to be safe. And we should be zocheh, as the source comes from Maimon Har Sinai, to see the best experience we've ever seen, even better than Har Sinai perhaps, with Mashiach Tzadkenu
v'mehera. Thank you, Rav Mayberg, again for coming and sharing.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
So I was at the Mahalo Reverend from Yerushalayim, Dr. Vigil,